Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. Greetings, gamer, and welcome to Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Today, I'll discuss some of my favorite games. So join me on the journey. Together, we can become game masters truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener and fellow GM and or player. Welcome to Game Master's Journey. I'm Lex Starwalker, and I am transmitting this from the Obsidian Monolith somewhere outside time and space. Ooh. So this is episode 3. This is actually a continuation of what I talked about in episode 2. I don't know how I thought I was going to get all that into a half hour. I'm crazy sometimes. So last time I talked about kind of my history with role-playing games. And so today I thought I would go in a little bit deeper with some of my favorite games that I've played. So first things first, if I'm going to talk about my favorite games, I have to talk about a little game I used to play called Changeling. This was part of the Old World of Darkness, what we now call the Old World of Darkness by White Wolf Games. And Changeling was maybe the least popular or one of the least popular of all their games. I think even Hunter, which wasn't even really a game, might have been more popular than Changeling. For some reason, it just never really took off like Vampire and Mage and Werewolf did, and even Wraith. There are some diehard Wraith fans out there. But I loved Changeling. I really had a lot of fun with it. I think the only time I actually played Changeling was at Gen Con. I was lucky enough to play Changeling run by Ian Lemke, who was the head developer on the game. So that was awesome. But every other time I was running Changeling, storytelling it. And one of the things I really loved about the game is, like all the White Wolf games, it really gave you a lot of role-playing opportunities, and there were mechanics in the game to encourage role-playing and to reward role-playing. So you had a nature and a demeanor. At least that's what it was called in Vampire. They might have called them something different in Changeling. I don't remember. It's been a long time. But those were two aspects of your personality. Your demeanor was kind of your facade that you show to everyone. And your nature was your true nature. And depending how you built your character, those could be very similar or they could be very much in conflict. And so you would get XP for role-playing those well. You also got willpower points back for role-playing those well. And willpower was a way that you could help yourself succeed at things that you wanted to do. So that was really cool. I also really loved the genre crossing that you could do in the dreaming of Changeling. So Changeling, if you don't know anything about it, basically you played a Changeling, which in that game was someone who was kind of a cross between a human and a fairy. And so it wasn't really the idea like in the new Changeling the Lost. In that game, my understanding is that you are actually a human who lived in the fairy realms, and now you've come back. So that's very different from what this Changeling was like. Your commoner Changelings were basically, they kind of had like fairy blood within them, and so they had somewhere in their ancestry they had a person who was a fairy, and they had basically to escape the forces of banality, which is like kryptonite to changelings. They kind of put their energy or their essence in with humanity. And so, you know, you'd start out your life like just a normal human, not knowing that you were anything different. And then your fairy self would awaken and you would you know, start to see all these crazy things around you that you never saw before. Kind of like in Hook, how the children could see the magic and Robin Williams couldn't, at least not at first. So the Shi, which were the nobles, were a little bit different. They were actually more like the human soul was replaced by the fairy soul kind of thing. But that's how the game worked. And the realm of the fairy, which in this game was called Arcadia, was sealed off from Earth, and you couldn't travel back and forth, though in ancient times you'd been able to. But what there was there was something called the Dreaming, and this was kind of like in Dungeons & Dragons, it would be kind of like your astral plane or your ethereal plane. It was this reality kind of laid on top of our reality that the fairies could travel into, and you had different levels of the Dreaming. In the Near Dreaming, it was, you know, things kind of look like their analog in the real world, only the colors were brighter and things like that, and things of human make, like buildings and stuff, tended not to be in the Near Dreaming unless there was a lot of emotion attached to them. But then you had deeper levels of the Dreaming where things became more and more fantastic and less like the reality that we know. And the whole idea behind the Dreaming was that it was the personification of all of human dreams. So anything that had ever been imagined existed somewhere in the Dreaming. And the more energy an imagining had, the more prevalent it was in the Dreaming. So something that a lot of people put energy into, like say Star Wars, you know, lots of people fantasize about Star Wars and things like that. So that would be something that you would definitely find in the Dreaming. And so it was really cool because since you could have anything of human imagining in the Dreaming, you could easily take a step and go from someplace that was very high fantasy to someplace that was very steampunk or very science fiction or anything you can imagine. And there were, you know, different realms within the Dreaming. You could get sucked into an area that was, you know, Sherlock Holmes, or you could get sucked into an area that was insert your favorite movie, book, TV show, whatever. It was all there. And it was awesome because as a storyteller, I could do anything I wanted and there were no limits. And it was a lot of fun. I also like the simplicity of the system compared to D&D, which was the other big game that I was playing back then, second edition. It was much easier to make rulings on the fly because the system was very simple and straightforward and kind of worked. Everything worked the same way, which basically you had an attribute, usually a rating of 1 to 5, and then you would have some kind of an ability, also a rating of 1 to 5, and you would add those two together, and that was how many dice you rolled. And it was very easy. Anything someone wanted to do to figure out what attribute would be relevant to that and what ability would be relevant to that. So, for instance, if someone wanted to shoot a gun, you know, it'd be a dexterity would be your attribute and your ability would be firearms, and you just add those together and that's how many dice you roll. It was super easy, and I liked it, especially as a relatively new GM, because it was very straightforward and it was very easy, like I said, to come up with how to handle things that came up in game without having to stop the game and look stuff up, which was awesome. After that, probably the next big game that I really liked was Dungeons & Dragons 3rd and 3.5 editions. At the time, I really thought this was an improvement to second edition. I was like all the DMs I knew that ran second edition. I had pages upon pages of house rules that I'd made to try to make the game, you know, what I thought it should be. And I found with third edition, there wasn't really any need to make house rules. The system was so well designed and everything fit together so well that A, you didn't need house rules, and B, any house rules that you made tended to kind of fuck things up, you know, in one way, shape, or form. So, you know, I never really messed much with house rules with Changeling or Vampire, kind of for the same reason. The system was put together well enough, you never really felt the need for them. But, you know, this was the first time with D&D that I just could run the thing as written and not worry about house rules, which is kind of cool. I also thought at the time that feats brought in a much welcomed increase of character customization options. You know, in second edition, we had kits, so you could get a kit for your character that would give you some new things. But that was kind of it. You know, other than that, you know, every fighter was kind of the same. And so I really liked feats, at least at first, because it was like, oh, wow, you know, you have all these different things you can get. And it was also cool because most of them weren't tied to a specific class. So no matter what class you played, you had all these feats to choose from. And sometimes it even gave you a way to kind of do things that, like, say, if you're a fighter, that normally a fighter wouldn't be able to do, which I thought was really cool. However, as I ran third edition in 3.5 more and more, I found as the campaign went on that combat got agonizingly slow at mid to high levels. It didn't so much bother me that much at the time. I mean, we just kind of went with it. And honestly, I'd never run real high level play in second edition, so I didn't know, you know. I just figured that was how high level play was. Third edition was the first time I really ran high level stuff. The first time I had a campaign that lasted long enough to get there, because I was never one to, oh, make a 10th level character. You know, that's lame. So I didn't mind it at the time, but later when I kind of came back to D20 and started playing Pathfinder, the slowness of the system really, really started to bother me. The other thing was there is a lot of systems bloat with all the splat books, and I'm just talking about actual Wizards of the Coast stuff. I'm not even talking about all the third-party stuff there was. There is an overabundance of feats and prestige classes, and those were kind of the worst offenders of the systems bloat, and it just kind of became ridiculous. Nobody ever played a single class. Everybody had like multi-classes and prestige classes and all these crazy feats. And it just got kind of ridiculous. At the time, I thought that the addition of miniatures was fun. I'd never used miniatures before. I never used miniatures in second edition. I never used them in any of the White Wolf games. But when I started running third edition, you know, a lot of the feats kind of required miniatures to really get the most out of them, you know, because you kind of needed to know your positioning. And the Dungeon Master's Guide, the 3.5 Dungeon Master's Guide, came with a kind of a blank grid kind of poster thing you'd unfold. And so I would just use like chess pieces and stuff. Like I didn't really go out and buy very many miniatures. And we would use that and we had fun with it. It didn't really bother me at the time. And then I think I mentioned in the last episode, I took a break from gaming for a while. And when I came back, fourth edition had happened and I decided that wasn't for me. So I got into Pathfinder, and at first it really seemed like an improvement on 3.5. When I was reading the rules and looking at the character classes and everything, I really liked it. I really liked that, you know, you could cast your cantrips an unlimited amount of times per day. I really liked that you got something cool with every level. You didn't have any, you know, quote unquote dead levels where you just get a hit die and maybe some spells, but you don't get any new abilities. And I really liked that in Pathfinder, pretty much every level of every class, you're getting something new, which is really cool. I also really liked the alternate racial abilities and how you could kind of swap those out. So if you were an elf and you didn't really care about, I don't know, being able to detect secret doors or something, you could swap that out for something that you liked. And they had some cool, you know, things for like different types of sub-races and stuff like that. And I thought that was really cool. And it just seemed that the system seemed tighter and more fun than 3.5. I liked, for instance, that the wizards got like their basic attack from their school specialty that they could use all the time. So no longer did you have the wizard character who's like trying to attack with a dagger or some shit. Like you actually had magic that you could use all the time, which was awesome. And I really liked the way that the school specializations were handled. I felt like in Pathfinder was the first time that I really found being a specialist wizard something that I considered. In fact, I think I played an Evoker for a while. And at first, I really liked the accessories that Paizo had, specifically the battle maps that you could use wet erase markers on and use them over and over. I really liked that. However, over time, as I ran the game and I played it, all this kind of newness wore off. And I found that even more than in 3.5, like you had to have miniatures, you had to have a grid. and they were ruining my game. I was spending more time, you know, more prep time drawing out the maps and balancing the encounters to the CR and all this crap than I was, you know, coming up with story or interesting personalities for my NPCs. And I found, you know, during actual gameplay that it really seemed more like a tactical war game than an RPG. As soon as combat began, and I often say about Pathfinder, you know, once you roll initiative, the role play is over. And that's how it really seemed. I found that from the players, I heard much more discussion about positioning and movement and terrain and 5 foot steps and crap like that than I did story. If I never hear the term 5 foot step again in my life, I will be very happy. I also found that Pathfinder brought out the rules lawyers and the min-maxers and the munchkins in the players, and this became a real problem. It was especially bad if you ever went to the Pathfinder forums on Paizo's website, and oh my god, you will think that you're in a forum for like WoW or something, because that's how it sounds. People comparing builds and, oh, I'm a new player, what build should I play? It's like, make a fucking play character and play it, you know? You don't need someone to hold your hand and say, you should pick this feat and you should take this spell. I mean, what the fuck? So the majority of my Pathfinder experiences were not good ones. They were mediocre at best. And I really do feel that the game emphasizes and encourages exactly the kind of play that I don't enjoy. Now, I'm not saying that Pathfinder sucks. There are people that like that kind of thing, and that's awesome. Good for them. I just don't. I'd rather roleplay. I'd rather have an interesting story. And yeah, you can have both. People will say, oh, well, you can roleplay in Pathfinder, and you can have an interesting story, and you don't have to use a grid, and you don't have to use miniatures. And it's like, well, okay, that may be true, but I mean, you can make that argument with any RPG, right? You can take any RPG and make it what you want. And I actually considered taking Pathfinder and creating what I like to call Pathfinder Lite. And I was like, well, maybe I could just take the grid out, take the miniatures out, take any feat or ability that, you know, references a 5 foot step or references threatened squares and crap like that, just gut the game of all that stuff. And I can use, you know, simplified distances and stuff like that. And I'll have a game that I like. Because at this point, I was playing Numenera, and that was kind of where it was at. But I still, like, I miss that D&D experience. And I was trying to think of a way to get a Numenera-like experience with Pathfinder so I could have, like, a nice D&D experience without this awkward, bloated system. And, you know, I quickly realized that, I mean, I would be gutting the game. So many of the feats and spells and abilities would be completely useless or not nearly as good without the grid. And, you know, classes like the fighter and the rogue that really relied on that kind of stuff would not be as good without the grid. And it would take a lot of work. I would have to go through all these sources and all this stuff. And you know, handpick, okay, this is okay, this is going out. This, it's like, why bother? Why bother when I can buy a game like Numenera, or I can buy a game like D&D 5th Edition, which I'll get to, and it's already there. And I don't have to, like, reinvent the whole system to make it what I want. So that brings me to Numenera, and I love Numenera. It's my, right now, it's my favorite game, although... Man, I'm really impressed with the new D&D. I'm running my first session this week. I'm so excited. But the setting of Numenera really grabbed me. I really like the science fantasy aspect to it. I have kind of, and I don't want to offend anyone, I'm not saying, I feel like I've outgrown fantasy. And I am not saying that fantasy, you know, if you like fantasy, you're a child. Or I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that for me, I was very much in the fantasy when I was in high school and when I was in college. And I read every fantasy book I could find. And it's like, now I've kind of been there, done that. And the last time I read a fantasy story that didn't seem like 100 other fantasy stories I'd read was Mistborn. And even that, you know, once you got past all the differences in the setting and everything, and the fact that it was a heist novel, and which you don't see a lot in fantasy, there's still a lot of the fantasy tropes there, you know. There weren't horses, though. That's a big trope that wasn't there. But anyway, so lately I've been more and more digging science fiction. And also part of it is, like, I really hate the religions in fantasy, especially when they're not done well, which usually they're not. It's just, I don't know. it's just like make-believe, right? Fairy tales. And I'd rather deal with things that are a little bit more real and a little bit more thought-provoking, which science fiction tends to be. Wow, I feel like I just got off on a tangent. What was I talking about? Oh, Numenera, the science fantasy aspect. I really liked it. I love the system. It's very easy to learn. It's very easy to teach. It's very easy to adjudicate. I always say that word wrong. Anyway, you know what I mean. It's easy to referee. It's easy to make NPCs and monsters on the fly during play, which try doing that with Pathfinder. Even D&D 5th edition, that would be a little rough, just coming up with a brand new monster on the fly and having mechanics for it. It would be a little rough. Character creation's a lot of fun, and it encourages some RP aspects. Although, I have to say, I think D&D actually trumps Numenera on this. I think the new D&D, you get a lot more role-playing kind of fodder when you're making your character than you do in Numenera, which is awesome. I also like that the GM does not roll dice. That is very, very cool. And that's something where when I play another game now, I kind of, the first thing I start doing is trying to figure out how I can get out of rolling dice. And it's funny because when I first heard about that, before Numenera was out even, I was very skeptical. I was like, I like rolling dice. How weird is that? Like to play an RPG and I don't roll any dice. I don't know, you know? But once I actually started running the game, it's brilliant, and it's like me. Once you get used to it, you probably won't ever want to roll dice again because, you know, it's just so draining, especially when it's like 3 a.m, you've been playing for 6 hours or whatever, and you're having to do all these stupid little math, you know, okay, add this bonus and subtract that penalty and add this bonus, and they rolled this, and the armor class is that, or what, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's really easy, but after you've done it 1,000 times in a gaming session and it's getting late, it's really mentally taxing. And in Numenera, you don't have to do any of that shit. The players roll all the dice. And it also removes a lot of the kind of the adversarial thing between players and GMs. And you don't have to worry about, you know, oh, I rolled a 20 and I just killed a PC. It's like if a PC dies, it's on them because they rolled the 1 or whatever happened. It had nothing to do with you as far as the dice go, which is awesome. I really like the GM intrusion mechanic. And if you don't know what the GM intrusion mechanic is, I'm not going to go into it because I just did like 80 episodes of a podcast called GM Intrusions. So there's like months of content over there in the GM Intrusions feed. If you want to learn more about that mechanic, go for it. I think I've said everything I could say about it at this point. However, you know, one thing about Numenera that I'm kind of, the more I play it, is becoming more and more of a thing. And this is more from a player perspective, but it is almost, or maybe it is a little too simple, because everything in the game uses the same mechanic. And pretty much, unless you're regaining your hit points, basically, every time you roll in the game, you're rolling a d20, and that's it. And I don't know. As a player, it gets a little kind of like, almost like there is no game or system to it at that point, because every mechanic is the same and every role is the same. That's a little unfortunate, but I think overall the pluses of the system outweigh the minuses. And again, that minus is from a player perspective. As a GM, it doesn't matter. I don't roll the dice anyway. So, and I've never had a player complain about it, so it may just be me. But I do feel like the one mechanic for everything makes the gameplay seem a little one-dimensional. And, you know, a game that's even worse about that, in my opinion, is Fate. And I've looked at Fate quite a bit, and I just can't get on board with it. It just seems, I don't know, it needs more. You know, just trying to fit all these round holes in this square aspect peg, or wait a minute. I just said trying to fit round holes in square pegs. Oh, man, I think I need to take a break. Also, the fact that there's only 6 tiers, and that's the cap, seems pretty limiting, especially when you're used to D&D, where you have 20 levels, and then you have levels beyond that, at least in 3rd edition in Pathfinder. So, yeah, there's that. Also, you know, for a game that claims to be about exploration, there is a huge emphasis on combat. I'd say at least as much as D&D, maybe even more. And there's not a lot mechanics-wise for social, investigative, and, hey, discovery situations. But, you know, no game is perfect. Another game I kind of dip my toes into is The Strange, which is also by Mighty Cook Games and is another... it has the same system as Numenera. It's called the Cypher system. In fact, these systems in The Strange are so much the same that they're literally copy-pasted from the Numenera book, which is a drag. Overall, the setting of The Strange just isn't as well realized as Numenera, and it's not as well executed, I don't think. And I think the game overall just isn't as well realized and executed. It seems kind of rushed and half-baked to me. Numenera is kind of like easy to run. There's so much there to like inspire you, and everything kind of fits together really well, and it makes sense, and you can just run with it. Where The Strange, conceptually, things are kind of half realized, and you really, as a GM, you have to kind of make it work somehow, and you have to really think about how you're going to present it, or your players are not going to buy it. It also didn't really deliver on what I expected from the system. I expected kind of the same genre bending that I got from Changeling that I really loved, but it just isn't done as well in The Strange, and it just seems kind of silly. The modern Earth setting for the game really especially falls flat for me and just is not realistically portrayed, and the other settings that are given just aren't interesting or evocative or unique enough to really redeem it in my mind. So I think that The Strange could have some promise. If for nothing else, it's some place to mine for some ideas, especially if you're running Numenera. You know, you can get some, maybe some new foci or descriptors or something like that from it. But ultimately, I think it would be easier and more satisfying to either apply Numenera the game to a setting of my own design, or come up with my own setting for D&D 5th edition, or revamp something similar to Changeling for the Cypher system or some other system, than it would to try to deal with The Strange, because I do feel like I would really have to kind of redesign it from the ground up for it to really work for me and be something I'd want to run or even play. So to me, The Strange, it kind of seems more like an iteration of Numenera and kind of recycling of other ideas from other games like Numenera and other games. It really doesn't seem like it's something new or unique in itself. It's just kind of a different version of things you've seen before. So I mentioned I consider Fate, but it's not really for me. I find it has a lot of the same issues as a Cypher system, which is to say it's a little too simplistic and there's too much writing on one mechanic. However, I still haven't run or played Fate, so I would like to actually give it a go just to see. I hate to kind of close the book on it without even really running it once. So that brings me to D&D 5th edition. Oh, you know what? You know what I totally forgot in my notes? I don't have anything about Star Wars in here. So another game that I've kind of played around with a little bit is Star Wars Edge of the Empire. And there is Star Wars Age of Rebellion, I think. And then there's the new Force and Destiny, or whatever it's called, coming out soon. But I got Edge of the Empire because that's the one that really appealed to me. I really like the idea of playing people on the fringe and, you know, your scoundrels and your bounty hunters and your smugglers and stuff like that. I think the dice system that Fantasy Flight Games uses for that is really interesting. I ran the little intro adventure on Google Plus, and that was fun. I had fun with it. I find, especially after playing Numenera, I find the mechanics a little awkward. Combat and other resolutions seem a little slow because you're rolling these crazy dice and you have to kind of sit there and interpret it. It's not like Numenera where you roll your d20 and you instantly know what happens. You have to kind of sit there and interpret and figure out the dice. Now, again, I ran one shot. So, you know, it's very possible that if I ran Star Wars more and I really wrap my head around the system that I could... I don't think it'd ever be as fast as Numenera. It's just, it can't be because it's more complex. But I think it could be as fast as, say, D&D 5th edition. And I really like the game. I really like the way it's designed, the way it's put together. I played the West End Games D6 version of Star Wars, and I like that. I like this better. and I played both of the D20 versions of Star Wars, and they sucked. Pigeonholing Star Wars into a class system does not work for me. So I really like the way Edge of the Empire does it with your professions and your specialties that you can get, and how you can get specialties from other professions, and you can really build a character concept that you want, even if it doesn't like fit right into some little slot they've made for you. So that's really cool. I like the way the Force is handled. Although, again, in Edge of the Empire, the Force isn't a big thing because, you know, not many people use it. So it'll be interesting when the new one comes out this summer that's all about the Force, to see what they do with it. I'm really interested in that. But that is a game that I would definitely like to play more. But it's one that I almost feel like I want to play that one around a table. I don't know that it works so well online, and there is a Google Plus Hangout app for the dice that you can use that works really well, but there are a couple issues with it when it comes to really interpreting the dice that I think makes it a bit more difficult than if you were sitting around a table doing it. So right now I pretty much do 90% of my gaming online. So if I get a good regular group together in person, Star Wars Edge of the Empire is something I'd really like to run for them. That would be awesome. So getting back to D&D 5th edition, I'm really liking it so far. Like I said, I start my first campaign later this week. We've made our characters, everybody's ready to go. I'm running the Tyranny of Dragons published campaign, which I really like, and I've seen some poo-pooing on reviews and stuff about it. And yeah, there's some editorial issues with it, but there are plenty of resources online where, you know, the author himself who wrote the adventure has given errata and everything for it. And I really respect anybody that does errata for their stuff, because there's no errata for Numenera at all, which is annoying. But, you know, there's plenty of errata out there, and there's plenty of blog posts by people who've run it who have advice for you on how to really make the most of it. But honestly, these people that are poo-pooing it, they just must not know what they're doing as DMs or GMs, because, I mean, I don't know. Different people are different, but personally, I don't think as a GM you should expect to be able to buy a published adventure, crack the thing open 10 minutes before you run the game, and just run the thing out of the box, as they say. You know, a published adventure does not get you out of your duties as a GM. It's just a way to streamline it a bit. And honestly, I don't think you should be spending less time prepping with a published adventure than you would with your own adventure. Just instead, you're spending that time fleshing out what's there, and it just gives it a deeper, richer experience for your players. It doesn't mean that you don't have to do any work anymore. And it seems like a lot of the criticisms I've seen about the adventure are, you know, things that you'd have to make work with almost any published adventure. And it just seems like people are kind of lazy and they don't want to do the work. So, you know, if you don't want to do the work, then play. Don't GM. I don't get it. So I really like the adventure. I really like 5th edition. It feels really great to get back to my D&D roots. And it seems like this game is going to capture what was lost in 3.x and Pathfinder, while at the same time avoiding the problems that 2nd edition had, and 1st edition for that matter. And you no longer need grids or minis. Yay! And I really like the way the magic works in D&D a lot better. And I actually just earlier this week, this will be way in the past when you actually hear this episode, because I am way ahead of the game on this. But I just recently wrote a blog post, 5 things I love about D&D 5th edition. And I'm sure by the time that you are hearing this, there will probably be at least 2 more of those, like 5 things I love about D&D. So go check that out, and I'll have it linked in the show notes. It's over at starwalkerstudios.com, and you can see kind of more detailed breakdown of the specific mechanics I like and things I like about the game. But I really like the way magic is handled. I never liked magic in D&D, like this whole idea of memorizing and forgetting spells. I always thought it was really stupid and didn't make any sense, and I'm glad that that's gone. Now you have, you know, your spells that you prepare for a day, and you have spell slots that you can fill with those spells. But it gives you a lot more flexibility as a caster, And I also really like the ritual cast possibility where certain spells, like, say, detect magic or identify, that are more utility spells that, you know, you want to be able to have that in case you need it, but you don't necessarily want to waste a spell slot with it every day, that those you can cast as a ritual, and it just takes more time to do it, but you don't have to use a spell slot to do it, which is awesome. I also really like the archetypes in the game. Now, some of these, you know, have been around forever. For instance, you know, your wizard archetypes are your different school specializations, which that goes all the way back to Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. And then, you know, your cleric specializations are different domains, which goes back to 3rd edition. But then all your classes have archetypes now. So there are fighter archetypes and rogue archetypes and barbarian archetypes and everything like that. And I really like it. The one thing I'm not sure about is, like, everybody can use magic now. So there's one of the fighter archetypes is called Eldritch Knight, and you get spells. It's kind of like a paladin. You don't get a lot of them, but you get spells. And there's a rogue one, the Arcane Trickster, which is straight out of 3rd edition, and you get spells there too. So there's not a class in the game, except, I guess, Monk, that can't get spells, which is kind of crazy. And monks, you know, they get their key abilities, which are sort of like spells. I also love that there is a cap on attribute scaling, so you cannot have an attribute above 20. And when you're creating a character, you can't have an attribute above 15 unless you roll it. And that is awesome. I hate the fucking point buy bullshit that you have with Pathfinder and, oh, well, I want to run this published adventure, but I use this point buy method instead of that point buy method, so I have to scale everything one way or another. Oh, it's such a headache. None of that crap in D&D. And also, having the cap on the scaling, it just, again, go check out my article. I go into all this in more detail. I don't want to, like, go on forever on this. There's also a cap on magic item usage and stacking of magic items, which is awesome. Solves a lot of problems from 3rd edition and Pathfinder. There's a cap on buff stacking, which again is awesome, and you no longer have to sit there as GM and watch your players cast every spell they know and stack 20 buffs on everybody before combat, which was always ridiculous. And I think in the blog I call it, you know, limiting the ridiculous or something like that, which is what this is all about. And wizards now always have cantrips that they can use however much they want, just like in Pathfinder, which is awesome. And the feats are, there's less of them, you don't get them as often, and they're a lot better, which is awesome, because feats were getting ridiculous in 3rd edition in Pathfinder. So this feels a lot like AD&D with some of the better innovations from 3.x. I also like that alignment is back to normal. When I looked at 4th edition, I about threw the book out the window when I saw what they did to alignment. You always thought alignment couldn't get worse in D&D, but 4th edition proved that it could, and it did. And also, I like that alignment is no longer nearly as important for spells and stuff. So you don't have your, like, good aligned and evil aligned spells and stuff so much anymore, to the point now that I think as a DM, it would be very easy just to take alignment out of your game and it wouldn't really affect much at all. In fact, like, paladins don't have to be lawful good anymore. How cool is that? No more lawful stupid paladins. Woohoo! Now, there are a few things I don't like about D&D 5e so far. I don't like some of the playable races. I don't like the Dragonborn. I don't like Tieflings as, like, a core race. And I don't like Gnomes or Halflings either, but I never have. I'm really not sure about the Warlock class. It seems a little too Pathfinder-y for me, and it's like they just wanted more classes, so they threw in Warlock. I don't know. I have to see when someone plays one how it works. So I'll just have to see. I'm actually cool with clerics only now having one domain, but we definitely need more domains to choose from. So obviously, you know, there's going to be more D&D books, and I'm really looking forward to a book with more backgrounds, and I'm really looking forward to a book with more archetypes for all the classes. What would be awesome if that was one book, a book of more backgrounds and more archetypes. Hopefully they don't go kind of like they did in 3rd edition, where it's like, well, here's the fighter book with some more fighter archetypes, and here's the bard book with more bard archetypes and more bard spells, and you gotta buy a book for every class. Hopefully they can put it all in one book. I mean, they've already got enough of our money, I'm pretty sure. All right. Well, that is going to wrap up the third episode. It got kind of long, but I really wanted to get through this stuff because I have other stuff, believe it or not, I want to talk about in this show. If you would like to reach me, you can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can follow me on Google Plus, just search for Lex Starwalker, and you can join the Game Masters Journey community on Google Plus. Go find us there. There'll be links in the show notes. You can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker, and you can find helpful links and show notes and everything else at starwalkerstudios.com. So thank you very much for listening to the third episode of Game Master's Journey. I will be back very soon with episode 4. Keep gaming.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.